Welcome to the Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners and macabre murders from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 81!
81!
With the sound effect of ice!
Ice in the background. I tried to do it sneakily away from the microphone. It did not work.
All you had to do was stay silent during the intro and you couldn't resist your Negroni.
I couldn't.
Even
it's,
for that
no,
time.
No, it's sitting there staring at me. How can I not drink it?
You're still not over Negroni week, I take it.
No, it's Negroni year. That's what it is.
Unknown Chinese New Year, the year of the Negroni.
The year of the Negroni.
That was when you were very much definitely born.
Forget those dogs, it was the year of the Negroni.
I was born under a Negroni...
Negroni star.
Star. I was going to say Negroni glass. It was terrifying for all concerned. Ah, how are you, Nick?
I'm all right, I've got a Negroni.
They're marvellous.
Just finished writing about 20 seconds ago.
You did, yes.
I'm sorry, I'm typing as fast as I can.
We are recording together again. Last week I had the plague, so Nick wouldn't let me in his house. But now I'm back in.
But you made me a Negroni.
I did.
Without
I did.
Ice, I'm not allowed to drink. So, made me a Negroni that I had to stare at and not touch.
This is it. This is it. This is the bloody double standards. Morning, noon and night. I'm allowed to make a cocktail. You can't go 5 seconds while I do the intro that we do every week without you jangling your ice in the microphone.
Need a drink, all right?
While making eye contact with me going, I know, I know what I'm doing.
I know, this really pisses you off, but I'm not going to stop doing it.
It's like a five-year-old holding your watch out the window going, oh, yeah. Ah, you're having a good week.
You'd have thought you'd have learnt by now.
After 81.
This is how this goes. I make your life a misery. I find it funny. You get really pissed off. That's how life works.
It's the best relationship I've ever had. Any poisonings this week?
Me, potentially soon. But I don't believe so.
Have you overdosed on Negronis yet?
Not as of yet. Is such a thing possible? Perhaps I'll find out.
What's your limit on Negronis? We should have had this conversation in Negroni Week. But now, looking back on Negroni Week, what did you learn? What's your maximum number of Negronis in of a day or a night?
I think 3 or 4, and I'm and I'm approaching falling over. Generally, because I make them quite large as well.
You do. So, three or four of your Negronis, I would be dead.
Yeah, I have generally a high tolerance for
you do.
For things.
All the cocktails that we enjoy, dear listeners, we should come with a warning label. Because once you get into these punchy cocktails, you're like, oh no, that's delicious. They're shorter. And then you sip them, you're like, oh, another one of those. Because the flavours are so beautifully balanced, the way Nick puts them together. But then you foolishly go for the third, and everything gets a bit kind of wavy lines, like, oh. And the next morning you have to go through your phone going, who did I text? Who did I text, and why do I now own a penguin?
often happens.
Well, speaking of drunk dialing to order penguins and never having enough Negronis, I think it's time for us to thank our lovely Patreon subscribers.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, everyone out there.
Thank you to all our lovely Patreon subscribers.
It is your mission this week, all you lovely people, to recruit more.
Recruit more.
To the Poisoner's Cabinet cult. So, go out there, spread the word, get more people.
In an evangelical style.
In an evangelical, spreading the word sort of way.
Absolutely. We haven't had any new subscribers this week. It's okay, because we've had a huge flurry of people. But if you've been thinking about joining Patreon, please do come over, give it a go for a month.
Well, exactly.
Loads of extra episodes every single week that we create. Lovely community over there, lots of chats, lots of bonus content. And as we said, we're now forming a church/cult. Wherever you are, start your own chapter.
Yeah, indeed.
However you choose to do this. If you want to swindle people out of money, I mean, who's to know? We will, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, we will provide the big portraits of Sinead and I for you to put on the wall above the throne.
And all the candles for which to do your black masses. Don't kill anyone. That's
how
awful.
These things work.
Well, that won't get us any more Patreon subscribers. Yeah. True. So keep people alive.
Yeah.
Have it as a living cult rather than a death cult.
It's getting weird.
Well, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
God, no.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison.
I'm already ahead of you.
We could drink poison. Joke about cocktails.
No, I want a cocktail.
You want more cocktails.
More cocktails.
Negroni isn't even a cocktail to us anymore.
Indeed.
Just milk.
Yeah. It's my... I'm going to have a cocktail. I'll have a Negroni first.
Yes.
Yeah, it's frightening that it's got to that, to be honest.
What have we done to our liver and our kidneys, yeah, actually, as well? Good, we're going to go with the first one. Hooray, hooray, yeah, hooray. It's Nick's story this week, so we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand.
God, no.
As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and we'll flavour our cocktail of the week. Nick's story. So he got to choose the secret ingredient.
I did. You shouted at me again.
And this week's secret ingredient, Nick, is...
is a test, a corpse.
A corpse.
A corpse.
A corpse.
Well, we haven't had one yet.
And I feel
81
foolish.
Episodes of dead people, we've not had a corpse.
I mean, I am speechless at the number of times you said to me that I can't have a corpse.
When?
There have been two occasions where I've said, it could be a corpse. You went, no, that's rubbish. We've already done that. Like, kind of in cocktails, not as a secret ingredient.
Only because I discovered another cocktail that would work, so...
Right.
And mainly because it's me, so I get to do stuff.
The subtitle of this episode is going to be Double Standards. That's it. The torture of Sinead and how she died alone and sad. A corpse. Fine.
A corpse.
You get to do a corpse. Wonderful.
I had a naked man. Now I want a corpse.
You've got to put the two together.
Not really.
Picture it, Nick. That's your penalty. Oh, get a good mental picture of it there, Nick. So a corpse, obviously people have chimed in immediately going, there's lots of variations on one of the most famous cocktails, Reviver.
A Corpse Reviver, absolutely, is the classic and would be, yes, unsurprisingly, would be the go-to one. And quite right, there are a lot of variations, a lot of very interesting variations out there on a Corpse Reviver.
And we would advise people to try a Corpse Reviver just once in your life.
I mean, give it a go, absolutely.
It makes the afternoon very interesting.
Yeah, they're interesting. You're not going to have four of those on the try, has to be said.
I mean, one was enough for us. Sent us slightly insane. We did have that period of sort of running through a few absinthe cocktails, and we realised we should not have absinthe cocktails. We've become fun. It's like white wine drunk, but on speed.
Yeah. There's a great quote. I think it's in the Savoy cocktail book, which is like, three of these, taken in swift succession, will swiftly unrevive the corpse again. Which is like, yep, absolutely right.
It is the classic. Well, we're not going to have a corpse revival.
Well, we don't know. We don't know what we're going to have.
We don't?
We don't. We don't. Because there are two options that I'm really tempted by, and I don't know which one to do.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you the choice.
Oh, me?
You have the choice.
Me?
And I have, in a magical sort of mystery podcast way, written the two choices on bits of paper that I have scribbled up here. So you have to choose. I don't know which one's which. Which one do you want? Which
Nick's
one is
turning
it?
Into a magician. Is this because bloody Darren Brown was in town and in our favourite coffee
in fact,
shop the
I
other
am
day?
I am the new Darren Brown, can't you tell?
Nick is holding up two bits of paper. Folded up paper, and I have to choose.
Have
and
to choose
I'm scared. Okay, I'm going to go...
Oh, what do you got?
I went with the lefty.
Right, so if it's a bad cocktail, you can blame Sinead.
Oh, for God's sake. You know when you say, like, flip a coin, you go, oh, I want the other one. That was what your heart wanted all along. This is a huge bit of paper. Why did you write this on a sheet? Oh, my God, it's a Corpse Reviver number four.
Number four. Oh,
number
we are having
four.
A number four.
What?
So the one we had before was a Corpse Reviver number two, which is sort of the classic one.
Because one was shit.
So, well, there's as we said, there were a variety, so this is a number four.
Okay.
Which I think might be slightly up your street. So, yeah, okay. I'm intrigued. So I'm happy with that.
Can I find out what was on the other bit
of paper?
Do you
want to look at the other bit
of paper? I do want to look at the other bit of paper. I want to look in the other box, Noel.
What's in the other box?
What's in the box?
What could you have won?
Here's Bully's special prize. Oh, God. Oh, a corpse's whiskers.
Corpse's whiskers.
Well, that's adorable. And upsetting, now I've thought about it. Actually, no. I've just gone whiskers. A kitten. Oh,
Are you happy with your first choice? Are you happy?
Well, people did reference the Corpse Reviver. We've done number two. And why shouldn't we do more in the Corpse Reviver family?
Indeed.
Let's do that. But I'm intrigued by the corpse's whiskers. The corpse's whiskers has a very visceral reaction one way or another in my head. It just immediately I go, adorable, a kitten. And then I go, oh, God, a dead body.
We're going with the Corpse Reviver number four.
Okay, well, we've made our choice. It is time for us both to go into the poisoner's cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
Well, Nick, what a time we've had.
It's been an exciting time.
Nick disappeared into the poisonous cabinet kitchen to make the Corpse Reviver number four, which is before us now. He also turned around while going through his cabinets and then just put three unlabeled bottles of booze in front of me and a label maker and went, I don't know what these are. Work it out.
I've got so many random bottles of stuff that either I've made or that you've given to me over the years when we've bought bottles between us. And I have no idea what's in any of them.
It was
so
tasting,
that was your task for today, tasting the booze.
Tasting booze and also using a label maker.
And using a label maker.
I was in Hog's Heaven. It's great. I've worked out two of them. The third one remains a mystery.
It's just got lots of question marks.
Something in there. We're like, what the hell is this? But back to the cocktail in question. We have the Corpse Reviver number 4.
Indeed.
And it's a thing of beauty. It's
it is quite pretty.
You've really gone all out on the little garnish.
I know.
You?
I think, oh, just going fancy with a lemon.
As in, he made a curl of it. Not just put a lemon on the side and went, ooh, fancy. Fancy. Exotic. Well, I have high hopes for the Corpse Reviver. All I can remember from the Corpse Reviver number 2
is that it said it's mad.
It did. It had absinthe involved.
Yeah.
And no, I'm thinking of Death in the Afternoon is the one with the champagne in it or something, isn't
that,
it?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
That's the one with the champagne. So there's no champagne in the Corpse Reviver, any variation that I'm aware of.
No, but something that's going to jolt us into frivolity, I think.
We'll find out, won't we?
Okay, well, I'm excited. Yep. Corpse Reviver number 4. We've skipped 1 and 3. They were the shit ones.
Indeed.
Okay, well, let's dive in and taste. Merry Christmas. Ooh. Oh, that's quite lovely.
It's good.
Oh, that's quite... Oh, that's quite lovely. And there's flavours. There's flavours,
there
Nick.
There are flavours going on there.
Interesting flavours I wasn't expecting.
Oh, I'm pleased with that.
Oh, it's intriguing. Tempts to win.
Yeah, no, that's good. Oh, we like that.
So, but it's not too sharp, not too
overly
sharp. I want to taste more.
Then taste more. That's what it's there for.
I'm gonna.
She's gonna in for it.
Oh, that's very nice. And there's enough going on there that I'm
keeps
intrigued. Yes. I'm getting lemon. I'm
you
definitely
getting
lemon.
Absolutely.
You've got some lemon curl on the side. Oh, big shock. Getting lemon, getting other kind of citrusiness. But there's, again, there's another flavour in there that's not horrible or overpowering. There's something nice in there, but I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah, so we have, there's quite the list of ingredients on this one.
Quite the bouquet.
It's quite the bouquet, yes, quite the variety. To start with, we have a base of tequila.
Yay!
Which I knew would make Sinead happy.
I'm very happy with tequila.
So yay. Corpse Reviver's usually, well, Corpse Reviver number 1 is cognac. The original Corpse Reviver. Corpse Reviver number 2 is gin.
Yes.
Number 3, I have no idea what happened to number 3. But 4 is tequila.
So number 3 is taboo.
Taboo. Yes.
As we all know.
That makes sense. So we have tequila. We have some triple sec. So a bit of an orangey twang.
Delicious, yes.
We have some lemon juice.
Okay, nice.
And there as well. We have Lillet Blanc.
Bit of a mousse.
Yeah, bit of a mousse. So, which is a standard in all of the Corpse Reviver's.
Yes, isn't it?
It has the Lillet in there.
And it is delicious.
And
so
it works
good.
Very, very nicely. There is a bit of sugar to balance out that.
Nice. Needed.
And then also the hint of absinthe.
The hint of absinthe?
Which, you get is with your Corpse Reviver's. You have to add the absinthe in there.
Oh, my God.
But it works, because usually I find, even in the smallest quantities, absinthe desperately overpowering. But it doesn't in this at all. You can taste it in the background a little bit.
You can,
but it's very, very, very subtle, which is difficult to get absinthe being subtle.
Normally when we have an absinthe cocktail, we immediately go, there's absinthe in it. And it's been a while since we've had one, because we kept going, there's absinthe, I'm going to die. Because absinthe is quite the taste and quite the drink, really. That's the first one, because of all of those really nice complimentary flavours.
That's really good.
That you don't taste the absinthe in it. But yeah, tequila, a good tequila is a thing of beauty. I'm into my tequila. Loving it. Yeah, it was so tasty.
That's going on the make again list.
And I'm smiling so
much. You are smiling.
Because
it's scary.
I'm smiling so much because after 81 episodes...
I've made a drink that Sinead likes.
No, it's just when they get it right. You know those classic ones?
Absolutely.
It makes... sense of all cocktails. People sort of go, oh, I'm not into cocktails, or they have the party drinks, so they go, you know, the reason we say go to a good cocktail bar, go to a good mixologist, because when someone gets it right and you try a cocktail with all of those ingredients perfectly balanced, you go, wow, this is what liquor is for.
Yeah,
I'm very impressed.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually a very recent addition to the Corpse Reviver family. From what I can see, this came around in 2019.
What?
So incredibly recent. Before that, yeah, it had been gin-based, cognac-based variants. But yeah, someone using tequila, a chap in Sweden, I believe, developed this in just a few years ago. And well done you.
Well done you. And what a does he do to get into the Corpse Reviver family? Does he have to go and apply to the estate of Ernest Hemingway?
You've got to think that there are certain things, like the Diffords book and stuff like that, which are generally sort of standards throughout the industry. So I don't know how exactly it works, but I'm assuming the chap who's come up with it, I'm assuming it's a chap, it could be a chapess, I don't know, has either named it the Corpse Reviver number 4 because they stopped at 3 and no one had done a number 4. So it's like, right, this is the next variation. So he's just coined the name and it's stuck.
It's worthy of it. And hopefully they'll have taken it to Diffords and said,
it's in the book now. So,
well, there you go. Like, you know, Diffords will have gone, yes, welcome you in with cookies. Delicious. Oh, I'm so happy. I'm so happy we went with this one. Now, the corpse's whiskers were not going to make that because Nick made me try the random booze in his cupboard as well as this, as well as having a Negroni. I think any more than that.
Yeah, trying it out. I may well do it on Friday. So we'll have it on Friday and then put it out Friday evening, potentially.
Yeah. Hand it over to you guys.
So, yep.
We'll put out the recipe. We will not try it this time. We'd love to know. We're not going to try it on this episode.
No, indeed.
But we're going to put it out. We may make it on Friday night. You guys, mix it up if you've got the ingredients. Do some videos. Tag us in the videos. Make sure you tag the Poisonous Cabinet wherever you're broadcasting it. Give us your reviews on it. It's time for you guys to start tasting and telling us how good alcohol is.
Because we don't know.
We haven't learned. Well, yeah. With the Corpse Reviver number 4.
Number 4.
Firmly in hand. I am fully revived.
Good.
Raring to go.
Excellent.
Is it time for a story?
It is most certainly time for a story.
Woohoo!
So this week we are having the tale of Alfred Packer. Now, and this is a name that some of our American listeners may be familiar with. They may recognise under his pseudonym, the Colorado Cannibal.
Okay.
So see, a corpse as a secret ingredient was not entirely inappropriate.
Generally for any of our episodes, it wouldn't be.
But more so on this one, I feel.
We're going to Colorado this week, and we're in Colorado on Patreon.
I know. Colorado is the place to be.
Colorado is the place to be. Absolutely. This week. Colorado fans, holla, holla.
So, Packer, he was born in 1842, one of 3 children.
You really milked that, didn't you?
3 children of James Packer and his wife Esther. Now, the family moved around a lot when the children were young, and James was a carpenter, and he generally went wherever the latest building boom was. There he went to find work. Alfred did not like this travelling around so much, and he tried various careers in his as a teenager. At one point, he was going to be a carpenter like his father. Then he was going to be a shoemaker. Then he was going to be a ranch hand person who looked after cows.
Then a candlestick maker.
And then a candlestick maker and a baker.
And a butcher.
All these things. He bounced from job to job to job and didn't like any of them. None of them seemed to suit. But when the American Civil War broke out in 1861, Alfred decided that it was his duty to fight. And despite his parents' protests, in 1862, he enlisted in the Union Army and joined the 16th Infantry Regiment. 8 months later, while he was stationed at Fort Ontario in New York, he is honorably discharged due to epilepsy.
Really?
Yes, indeed. Now, this is not something that had come about, or has been reported about his childhood. So whether it was something that developed later in life as a result of an injury or illness or something, or it had been with him throughout and was just very hushed up as a child, I do not know. But he was honourably discharged due to this. But he is not at all happy about this. He wants to do his bit. So he decides to travel south. And on the 8th of June, 1863, he enlists again, this time with the Iowa Cavalry Regiment. Obviously, no doubt keeping his previous enlistment under his hat secret.
He's gone from the north down to the south.
Yeah, not that far south.
Not that far south.
So still Union.
Still Union, because I was wondering.
Yeah. So he tries to, he does enlist again. Obviously, information is not so quick at that time. They cannot just Google him and go, no, you were in New York and you were discharged. So they take him in. Come on in, you're fine. Come and ride a horse.
TikTok messaging is not high. Someone is doing a dance explaining why this man was discharged. What?
Less than a year later, he is once again discharged. Charged for epilepsy. Now, in his army documents, it's recorded that he is having seizures every other day. But it's perhaps that's not surprising that he was not overly welcomed into his unit. Probably difficult to conduct particular military exercises when you're at the risk of having a seizure. Sorry, army is not the life for you. After this, he travels west. He goes west, and over the next several years, he again tries job after job after job, and he cannot find anything he likes. He's a hunter, he's a wagon driver, he's a rancher, and he's a field worker. But his seizures and his increasingly unpleasant attitude attitude ensure that he never keeps a job for long. He develops quite an unpleasant reputation as an argumentative and difficult person. But as a result of him not being able to hold down a job, he gets angry and annoyed. He turns out not to be a particularly jolly chap to be around.
He seems quite bittered.
Quite bitter by the hand that life has dealt him.
You can understand part of that he would be very upset and he would be annoyed. Yep. And then just the resentment is building.
Indeed. So, yes, he is not a happy chap. And people, in fact, suspect him of stealing as well. Potentially because he's not able to hold down a job and earn a decent wage. He is forced into the life of petty theft or something to keep himself going, keep himself alive. And he gets discovered and he has to move on to the next place and he gets bitter and angry about that. So not a happy story, really.
No, it's not a happy story.
Not a happy story.
The corpse survivor is not happy about this.
So I'm sorry that the story entitled The Colorado Cannibal has not gone overly happy to begin with.
No, it's just a bleak picture of disability at this time. You're like, oh, God.
I think it was pretty bleak at this time, to be honest. For a couple of months, he decided he's going to try his hand as a guide, escorting travellers across the plains of America.
Oh, God, there they are. There they bloody are.
I knew I had to get
the
in there.
Plains of America. This is Denver. What are you doing? It's known as plains.
He claimed to know all the best routes, all the secret ways around. Turns out he was just as bad as being a guide as he was at everything else. People swore never to travel with him again. He got them lost time and time again, taking them on long, meandering routes that ended up exactly in the wrong place.
Okay. So it
did not go well for him. He ended up working in mining-related jobs, as a gold miner, a tin miner, coal miner, whatever he could find. It was manual labour. There was nothing complex or difficult about it. It was just basic, back-breaking work. But even there, his bad luck seemed to follow, as invariably, as soon as he left one mine in search of the next better thing, that mine would strike a massive gold seam, and everyone would earn their fortunes and become millionaires, and he had already left.
Oh, just
and
after he
just
left.
Just after he left. The next day, oh, look, millions of pounds just in the ground.
Like leaving the slot machine.
Yes.
Someone else comes in and takes your jackpot.
Exactly. He is always after the grass. It's always greener just over there. And it never, never was. And this only makes him more bitter and more angry and more generally unpleasant to be around. In 1873, news of a massive gold strike in Breckenridge, Colorado, filters across to the mines surrounding Salt Lake City in Utah, where Packer is working at the time. This is huge news. Rumours come through of men who are finding so much gold that they can't possibly carry it all. Others who are set for life after a single day's work. The ground is so rich. Now, who on earth wouldn't want part of this? Adventurous miners were leaving the area in droves to strike it rich in Colorado.
Ah, the gold rush.
Indeed. One of these men was Bob McGrew.
Bob McGrew. Oh, sounds salty.
Absolutely. He rallies any willing men to make this trip to Colorado. Now, most of these people are strangers to each other. They don't know each other, but he persuades them to follow him across the Rocky Mountains to go and seek their fortunes. And 20 men leave Utah, heading for the gold fields of Breckenridge, about 500 miles away. So it's a big old trek.
It's a big old trek.
It's a big old trek. It's a big old country.
Yes.
They stop in the town of Provo, around 25 miles outside of Salt Lake, to stock up on supplies and prepare themselves for the long journey ahead. In Provo, the group run across Alfred Packer. They got to talking one evening in a bar or an inn or something, and Packer asked them where they're going. When he heard they are heading to gold country, his ears prick up. He has heard of fortunes being made every day out there. Surely this was meant to be. This was his lucky break. Yep. He's met these men, fortune has smiled upon him, and he asks to join them. However, Packer is completely broke at this point, and he lacks any of the supplies or equipment that he needs to make this long journey. All the other men have kitted themselves out themselves. They've footed the bill for all this.
Yeah, it's a big old trek.
It's a big old trek. They need provisions and equipment and all this sort of stuff. And no one is really willing to share what they have with this stranger. So they're understandably rather apprehensive about letting him join. Then Packer throws down his trump card. He claims he is both a skilled prospector and an expert guide.
Oh, God, no.
He knows territory incredibly well, like the back of his hand. He can get them through the mountains quicker than anyone. Now, of course, this changes things amongst the men. They are not at all familiar with this area, this route that they're having to take.
Oh, God.
And to have an experienced, knowledgeable guide in their party is invaluable. None of them could afford to hire one. So one that wants to come along, as far as they're concerned, hurrah. And this is more than they could have hoped for. And of course, they say, yes, absolutely. The men pool their remaining money to be able to kit out Packer with the provisions and the equipment and things that he'll need, that their guide will need. And soon they are ready for the long trip through the mountains. And in November 1873, the party of 21 men set off.
And was it sort of 40 minutes into their conversation where he just went, by the way, I'm a guide.
By the way, I'm a guide.
I know these mountains like the back of my hand. There's one mountain, there's two mountains, there's a valley, and then there's another mountain. They're like, he's a genius.
He knows exactly where
he's leading
going.
The way. And like, they set off in the morning, like dawn, they're all all kitted out. And he's like, this way. Like, dude, that's the way we just came. Where are you going? This way.
That's off a cliff. No.
No. Looking at the compass going, why doesn't it say up?
The winter 1873-1874 is unusually harsh, and it quickly becomes clear that Alfred may have slightly oversold his skills as a guide. The snowy weather bogs down the wagons and the horses and makes the route incredibly tough going. The rough sort of trail that has been cut into the mountain that they are supposed to be following quickly becomes snowed over and they cannot find it. And Packer takes them on numerous unnecessary diversions and detours, doubling back on themselves and getting horribly, horribly lost.
Oh, so tense.
Tensions,
I don't like it.
Absolutely run super high. Super high? That's just a really weird way of saying
it. Super high. I like it. It's
super high.
Super high.
And Packer, who believes that he still believes he is the important one in this group. He
of
is
course.
the skilled one. But he demands that he ride in the wagon rather than walk alongside.
He's the guide.
Yeah, but he said to go that way, but he needs to preserve his strength. So he can't possibly walk alongside. He should be in the wagon with the provisions and the equipment and everything like
with
that.
With the snacks.
With the snacks.
I can understand that.
He also says that he realises that he should have more rations than everyone else. So he can concentrate more, that he can keep up his
fuck off.
Acuity and recognise
where
he is and stuff like that. He needs to keep his mind sharp, so he needs food to do that.
Everyone has to have their mind sharp. He doesn't know where he's bloody going. Has to remember how to go the wrong way. Is that it?
He thinks he should be excused from any of the work of sort of setting up a camp of an evening, chopping firewood and stuff like that.
Oh, now I'm angry.
Because he has to preserve his strength, his ability to find his way. He's a lazy bastard. He's described by one of the party as a whining fraud.
God love you if you do have a disability, if you're living with that. But, you know, if you're also just sitting around when you're well, or just, you know, I should be able to have all of this. He's never disclosed it, has he?
Well, I mean, this is one of the reasons he thinks he should be in the wagon, because it becomes quite clear soon after they set off. Obviously, he never tells them initially about his issue with epilepsy, but it soon becomes quite apparent after a few days' trek that he starts having a seizure. He should be in the wagon. Mm. So the men get incredibly annoyed that
this was never
disclosed. This was never discussed
in the first
beforehand,
place,
and we now have to look after you when you're in this state, because we can't just leave you lying in the snow to freeze to death. So we've got to take care of you as well while you're in that condition. So they are not overly pleased.
I need to lie down in this wagon and have all of the grapes, because they were known for carrying grapes.
Have they had many a grape?
Yeah.
But the grapes soon run out.
Of course.
And the men are reduced to eating the horse feed to survive.
What about the horses?
And for a time, it looks like the horses themselves are going to be next on the barbecue. But eventually, at the end of January 1874, they spot a settlement. The group stagger into this camp. It is the camp of the Utah Indian chief, Ouray. Near Montrose in Colorado.
Ooh.
They discovered they have travelled 350 miles. It's taken them 3 months to get 350 miles. They've still got another 150 miles to go.
3 months?
3 months to get this far. That's going back on themselves, up and down mountains, though they didn't need to go up and down.
That ain't right.
No, it ain't right indeed. Now, this chief, who's actually known as White Man's Friend, his nickname.
Always a nice name.
He welcomes this haggard group into his camp, and he's quite amazed to hear that what these crazy men have attempted to do, knowing that they were heading into the mountains in the middle of winter. Why would you do such a thing? That's just stupid. He is equally amazed to see that despite they are obviously hungry and thoroughly sick of the sight of each other, they have reached his camp relatively unscathed. None of them have died. There's no frostbite. There's no serious injuries or anything.
Well, fair enough.
They're all alive. Good for them, really. They've made it this far. But the guys think they are not at the gold mines yet. They know that every day more and more miners are flooding into Breckenridge and from all over the country, and they are anxious to get there and stake their claim to a plot of land before the riches run out. The chief strongly recommends that they postpone the rest of their trip. There's another 150 miles until spring, when the winter has ended, there's been a bit of a thaw, the paths are traversable again.
Wise.
Very wise, and he even offers to let them stay at the camp until then, and he will feed and look after them. That sounds like an incredibly generous offer.
But the gold rush will...
But they've gold fever and want more shiny things. The group stay at the camp for a couple of weeks, sort of recuperating. They are hoping for a sign that the winter weather is letting up, is going to break, but it just gets worse and worse and worse, and the snow is coming down. At the beginning of February, the group convene to make a plan. The snow is now far too deep for the wagons and horses to make it anywhere. If they go in the mountain, the wagons are going to get stuck, the horses are going to die. There's no chance of them doing anything. They are going to have to remain at the camp. But it would be feasible for men to make it on foot. If they were so inclined, it would be doable. 10 of the men decide that this is not worth the risk. I am not going to risk it. They elect to stay at the camp, and they'll follow on in the spring with the wagons and horses and all the extra supplies. That leaves 11 men willing to risk all to get to the goldfields first. And one of them is Alfred Packer.
You've got nothing to lose, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah. Apart from your life. Seeing that the men are determined in their plan, the chief gives them provisions, very generously, for their trip, and gives them directions to Los Pinos Indian Agency Camp, which is the nearest camp. It's about 75 miles away, but it's the closest settlement to them, and from there they can make their way to Breckenridge. The chief's directions skirt around the highest mountains. Don't go through any of the mountain passes. Much, much safer. This time of year, you'll make it there alive. It'll take you a bit longer, but you'll get there. Once again, Alfred butted in. I know of an excellent shortcut, he says.
For God's sake.
Straight through the mountains. It'll take half the time off the trip. Absolutely. We can do it. Not a bother at all.
There's always that one wanker when you're on a trek or you're going anywhere and you're walking across the city going, no, I reckon the shortest route is the straightest one. You do not know what you're talking about.
Indeed.
Shut up.
Now, 5 of the men are absolutely like that. They are adamant, no, we are going the longer, safer route. They are sick to death of Alfred's nonsense, his lies. There is nowhere they are following him anywhere. Alfred becomes so argumentative with this group of people that they pull a gun on him and tell him, just go away. We don't want you here. Just fuck off. Seeing the gun, he backs off and says, fine, I'll go my way.
He does seem like someone who is just really insistently in your face. Like, yeah. I have the best solution to think, oh, I've dated people like that. Yeah.
Amazingly, 5 others, though. A chap called Shannon Wilson Bell, James Humphrey, Frank Miller, George Noon, and Israel Swan all agree to follow Packer.
All
through the mountain. Good names. Good hardy names. And they agree to follow him through the mountain pass to Los Pinos.
You fools!
Fools indeed. Somehow, obviously, also the difficulties and miseries he has caused in the first leg of the trip have been entirely forgotten. It's all lovely and jolly.
Tired, though, they think. Is there a shortcut? Yeah. Sometimes that gets to you, that, you know, the idea of going around and spending another, you know, several weeks going a route.
Well, and so they go, yes, fine, up this mountain trail in the falling snow. 2 months later, April the 16th, 1874, Packer arrives at the Los Pinos Indian Agency completely alone. He looks surprisingly fit for a man who has just had a 2 month trek for 75 miles. It's taken him 2 months.
For 75 miles?
75 miles has taken him 2 months through the mountains.
2 months?
Yep.
Pussy.
That's exactly what they said when they saw him. Fucking pussy.
I could do that in a day.
I could run there and back again.
Run there and back again.
The first group, who went the long way round, had arrived weeks earlier.
Yeah.
And they've been having a jolly time at the camp, refreshing themselves. And
I love the way you go, like, at the camp, refreshing themselves consistently with water. Ooh, yes, let's have another drink. Let's have a shower.
Absolutely.
Let's have a little dance. What are these people doing?
Exactly. Having a jolly time, regaining their strength before the next leg of the journey. And then, yeah, Packer rocks up. One of these men who went the long way round, a chap called Preston Nutter, asks Packer, well, where is everyone else? There are six of you that left. You're here by yourself. Parker claims that he had got his feet wet and frozen, and the others had abandoned him as he was no longer able to walk. And they had left him.
What? Okay.
To his fate. Somehow he had recovered from frostbite, which he had no sign of.
Famously.
Walked into the camp by himself. Of course, there'd be no sign of the other five men at all.
He got his feet wet. They froze.
They froze.
They left him.
Yep.
His feet were encased in ice, apparently. He had frostbite, lost no digits.
Yep. His feet thawed out, were entirely, perfectly usable afterwards, and he walked to the camp.
That is how frostbite
works. That's how these things work.
That man is an idiot.
People don't necessarily believe him, but they can't prove either way, really.
Your story is stupid.
Your story is stupid,
you
but
seem like an idiot,
yes,
as well.
You're an idiot. No one likes you, but okay, you're here. So, okay,
ugh,
fine.
You're here.
He has a short stay at the agency, and then he decides to accompany Nutter and a couple of other men further east towards the gold fields.
I bet you all the guys who were at the camp earlier, when they were waiting for the others to arrive, just saw him walking and going, oh, for fuck's sake.
Why did it have to be him?
Not that guy. Why? God, he's going to walk with us. Yeah. Just pretend we're going in a different direction. You know, it's
we're
like,
going back the other. We're going back to the mountains.
Yeah, we're going back to, oh, no, we're walking the same way. Oh, shit. We're going to have to make small talk.
During this trek, Nutter sees that Packer has a skinny knife on him, but that he knew had belonged to Frank Miller, one of the other chaps who had gone with Packer. And he knows that this knife would not have been given up easily, and certainly not to a man like Packer. And he begins to have doubts about the story he's been told about being abandoned by the others. The group arrive at their next stop in Sagawash, and things become even more suspicious, with Packer freely spending money, buying nice shiny things, even offering a loan to another chap.
She was poor.
Well, exactly. This makes Nutter and the other members of the original party incredibly suspicious. He was broke when they started. There are not a lot of earning opportunities across the mountain in winter. So where is this cash come from? In Sagawash, the group also have news from the Los Pinos camp that the other men have still not arrived, and it is assumed that they have been lost in the mountain somewhere. This only confirms in people's heads, though, that Packer must have done something. He must have done something to the other men, stolen their cash, anything of worth, the knife, and they decide that Packer has to pay for what they assume his actions would be, and they make plans to hang him.
Okay,
be
good.
Damned with
okay.
it. No, he has done something to their mates. No.
I mean, he very much, given the title of this episode, he very much definitely has. But also, the logic of people, he's probably done shit. Let's hang him.
Let's hang him.
Do we need a trial? No.
Nah,
I have a feeling, a good feeling about this. Get the rope, Mabel.
Thankfully, there was someone there who did have more of a sense of justice. General Charles Adams.
Nice.
He was amongst the party as well. He was the head of the Los Pinos Indian agency, and he had accompanied them on their travels, and he steps in to save Packer. He is not about to hang a man, well, not without good proof, anyway, not without some
and
evidence.
Fair.
So I think that's a reasonable, good on you, Mr. General. And he begins his interrogation of Packer.
I'm sorry. I'm just imagining, like, the general has not had a lot of contact with Packer. I will interrogate him 9 minutes later. He walks out going, hang the shit out of him. I can't even with this man. He is so annoying.
Packer soon signs his confession.
Wow.
He claims that about 10 days out of camp, Israel Swan dies. We don't know what of. Was it an illness or was it an injury?
Shock at the frostbite.
Shock at the frostbite, but he has passed away. He's the eldest one of the group, an older chap. Yeah. He's died. The others, already running low on provisions, decided to eat him. It's the only way forward. Cannot give up this source of fresh meat. 5 days later, James Humphreys dies.
Convenient.
Again, we don't know. Injury, illness, hatchet to the head. Not sure. And what you can't let good meat go to waste. So he is also...
What?
On the menu.
No! No!
Well, yes, apparently this is what he says in his confession. He also says that how he goes through Humphreys' belongings and finds a pocketbook with $133 in, which he takes, explaining his wealth at the camp. Sometimes afterwards, he had been away from the group gathering firewood. And when he returns, he sees Frank Miller dead, apparently of an accident. He's told there was an accident. Frank Miller is dead. Frank is also next on the barbecue. And Packer pockets his knife, the skinning knife.
The skinning knife.
That was seen earlier. With the group getting steadily smaller, next, Shannon Bell shoots George Noon in the head after an argument.
What?
Obviously, things are getting tense in the group. They're stranded on the middle of a mountain. They're lost. They don't know where they're going.
And?
An argument.
They've developed a taste for meat.
And they have developed a taste for human flesh.
Human flesh. It's addictive.
And George Noon is shot in the head. Shannon and Packer are now the last two men standing. Now, supposedly, they...
Kiss.
They don't kiss. They create a pact amongst themselves. They're not going to kill each other. If they don't make it out, it's either both of them or none of them are going to get out of this, they say.
That's such bullshit.
Oh, completely. Because apparently, Shannon, according to Packer, Shannon does not keep up his end of the bargain.
Surely not.
And one day he sees Shannon charging at him with his axe raised. But he trips and strikes a tree and knocks himself out. Packer grabs his gun and shoots him in
Shannon.
Self-defense, of course. So Packer has actually not actually killed anyone himself.
Of course
he's
not.
He's only shot Shannon in self-defense after he was being charged at.
He's only witnessed this tragedy of unfortunate accidents and people running at you with axes and running into trees.
Exactly.
All of this, he was standing idly by going, well, if there's a bit of thigh going, I'll have a nibble.
he then makes the 2-week journey further to the agency by himself. Now, the general
well
thinks...
Well sated.
This
the
is, well,
tummy.
Indeed. Well, he arrived looking quite well nourished.
With the knapsack on my back.
The general thinks that it's a plausible story.
Shut up!
It's not beyond the realms of possibility. It's not likely. I mean, people go mad in the mountain. Men go crazy. Not unheard of, not beyond the realms. But the general reasons that if Packer's telling the truth, then he is going to have no problem leading a party of men back to the original campsite. They'll find the first body or something like that, and it will prove his story. And initially, Packer says, yep, fine, let's do it. I'll take you there.
I'm loving off... the energy of the general. The general is sitting there. I was not with him at first.
He's with a Negroni, swirling a Negroni.
So much. Negroni with a cigar, sitting back. It's perfectly plausible. And he can, swirly, swirly, swirly. Lead us back to that camp.
Yeah.
That general, that is some petty shit and I am here for it.
And so they do. This search party goes off along this trail. Packer claims to get lost. It was winter when he came through. It was all snowy. He can't find his way. I can't find my trail.
These trees were covered in snow.
At one point, he rushes at Constable Herman Lauter with a knife, apparently. And he is taken back to Seguash. In irons.
He had the hunger upon him.
Yeah, absolutely. He had the rage. He is taken back and imprisoned. His story is looking rather more suspect. In the meantime, another search party has been sent, and they have found the trail the Packer and the group had used, and they trace it back. Now, they are searching as they go. They're expecting to find the remains of this party sort of strung out along the trail as people are knocked off, killed for whatever reason, they're going
to
be spread out
to death.
They do not find this. They eventually trace their way back to the very first camp, and there they find the remains of all five men.
No.
All in one place. All men showing evidence of being skinned and flesh removed, particularly on the chest, which may well be the tastiest bit.
The tit meat.
Indeed. The lovely, the breast meat is the tastiest.
Succulent.
Quite.
You need to go with the thigh. That's the thing.
Well, no, Packer went straight for the breast. Now, Packer's tale is obviously a lie.
What?
So, obviously, his tale is completely fabricated. He is arrested and charged with murder. However, the jail is little more than a log cabin. There's no security, there's no barbed wire or fences, and he is able to escape easily, and he vanishes. And he disappears 9 years later.
What?
We do not know what he's been up to in these intervening years.
Was he just in a wicker cage with some barbed wire around it?
He's out there munching on people as they pass by.
9 years?
9 years.
He's the shittest guy in the world. How did he evade people?
He's managed to for 9 years. On the 11th of March, 1883, he is discovered in Cheyenne in Wyoming. Living under the alias of John Schwartz. He is spotted by a chap called Gene Cabazon, who was one of the original party members who elected to stay at the camp until the spring. So he recognised Packer. He goes to the local sheriff and said, "That man is John Packer. He is wanted for murdering five of my friends."
Yes.
And the sheriff goes, "Right, okay, fine," and goes and arrests him.
Nice. Good, goes good. Straight sheriff away. Is like, something to do, finally.
And he contacts General Adams, the tramp from the...
General Adams, okay, let's picture it. He's sitting in his rocking chair. He's silhouetted by a window. He's swilling his ninth Negroni of the day because it doesn't even touch the size of General Adams. No. He's that hard. He's smoking a cigarette. And then the call comes and he's sort of like, he's been leaning back in his chair. He sits forward and goes, "I always knew that call would come."
Yep, that's exactly how it went down. I don't know if phones were a thing then. Maybe.
The call, okay, the telegram. Phones haven't been invented, General. I knew phones would be invented.
Packer is transported to Denver for further questioning, and the General Adams meets the convoy in Denver. The General knows that obviously that this original confession is utter bollocks, complete rubbish, and he persuades Packer to make a second confession, which he signs on the 16th of March. Now, this time, instead of claiming that the men gradually kill each other to survive, Packer now claims that Shannon Bell has gone mad and killed all the others with a hatchet, all while Packer is out scouting, because he's a guide, that's what he does.
Convenient.
When Bell spots Packer, he charges with his hatchet raised, and Packer shoots him twice in the stomach. Packer is alone, lost, trapped in a camp full of dead men. He says he only resorts to cannibalism after several days of starvation. This the only means of survival. At the camp, he prepares strips of human flesh to sustain himself on the long trek out to the camp that he's going to.
Jerky?
Yeah, exactly. A bit of human jerky going on there.
Very nice.
On the 6th of April, Alfred Packer's trial begins in Lake City in Colorado. He is accused of premeditated murder. The trial lasts 7 days.
Oh, okay.
Which is pretty good going, actually.
Good going, for a case of size.
Not cut and dry. He is found guilty.
Hey.
And sentenced to death by hanging. He maintains his innocence throughout.
Of course he would.
Of this. Maintaining the fact this is all Shannon Bell. Okay. He is the one who went mad. He confesses, "Yes, I ate human people, but because if I didn't, I would be dead." The papers give a lurid and entirely fictional account of the Colorado cannibal. According to them, for the last 9 years, he has been ravaging the countryside, eating anyone he could see.
Of course.
It's not entirely true. According to a local paper, the presiding judge, a chap, M.B. Jerry, who seems a very colourful character.
Okay.
And I'm not sure how I'm going to do this, because I can't say this in a... It's written in a very, very horrendous sort of Western accent.
Okay.
And I can't do it. So I might read it in my very boring English accent, and you have to translate it in your head.
Right.
Or I might get Sinead to read it in a cowboy Western sort of voice.
So how kind of cowboy Western are we talking?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm going to turn my computer out, so you have to read it. It's quite funny.
Right. Okay. Good. This is live, people.
This is all live.
We're talking like Clint Eastwood-y kind of-y?
Yeah, go do your best stereotypical cowboy Yosemite Sam type.
Okay. "Stand up, you voracious man-eating son of a bitch! And receive your sentence. When ya came to Hinsdale County, there were 7 Democrats. But you, ya had 5 of them, goddamn ya. I sentence ya to be hanged by the neck until you're dead, dead, dead. As a warning against reducing the Democrat population of this county, Packer, you Republican cannibal. I would sentence y'all to hell, but the statutes forbid it."
That was fun. I also think it's probably an offensive to a great many people out there. So yes, blame Sinead for that one.
No, it's the language it was written in. I'm not saying it's true. It's a caricature.
Yes, a caricature. Exactly so.
White crazy people. It's very Yosemite Sam.
Yeah, exactly.
And if
that's
offensive to people, we are not condoning it.
I like that. When you came to Hinsdale County, there were 7 Democrats.
There were 7 Democrats, and you ate 5 of them. And also, there is written Democrats.
Democrats. The actual court records are somewhat more formal and less exciting, so to what he actually said. But the sentiment is the same. I think dead, dead, dead is repeated in the formal transcript as well. However, the execution is stayed due to an appeal. And in October 1855, the sentence is reversed by the Colorado Supreme Court. And he is retried for the same crime, but this time for the lesser crime of manslaughter.
So they're kind of buying his story?
Yeah, so I think it's because there is no proof either way.
There's no proof of murder.
There's no proof that there's... Yes, and he's fully admitted that to cannibalism. Put his hands up and said, yes, I did
that. So it's not premeditated.
So he's saying, these people were killed. I took advantage of the situation so I could survive. Because there is no evidence really one way or the other, apart from his confession and his lies originally, his original confession. So because he had confessed two different ways, it did not go well for the second trial, and he is found guilty of manslaughter. And a big part of that was because of his two confessions, because of his differing stories. But this time he is sentenced to 40 years.
40 years.
Which is, at the time, was the longest custodial sentence in US history.
Oh.
It's the longest time anyone, because before that it was just hang him up.
Hang him high.
We don't do 40 years in prison. Now we just kill him. Alfred Packer was paroled on the 8th of February 1901. He stayed in Colorado for the rest of his life, maintaining his innocence of manslaughter throughout. Dies at the age of 65, reputably of dementia, trouble and worry.
That's like a Dolly Parton song.
Yeah,
sorry.
He's become something of a folk hero, really, in Colorado. And his name is... It is not... discussed with sort of horror or disgust, and it's more he is a folk legend. The University of Colorado in Boulder has named their cafeteria the Alfred D. Packer Memorial Grill.
Oh, nice.
Which is excellent.
Nice.
I love it. Nice. There is a musical based on Alfred G.
Why aren't we performing Packer, this right now?
Written by Trey Parker.
No!
Before he did South Park, because he was at the University of Colorado.
How have I not seen this?
Oh, it's on YouTube. That's okay. It's not been a big thing. He did it, he wrote it while he was at university. And I think there are some YouTube videos of him performing in it, sort of at university, but that's as far as it ever went.
Okay, we're watching this on Friday.
So that is the story of Alfred G. Packer, the Colorado cannibal, something of a folk hero to many now.
Yay! Like it! I like the way you're bringing the folk hero stories into the main episode. We've done a few on Patreon. This is a good thing. Oh, that's a good story. Oh, it's a good story. Oh,
makes you think, did he, didn't he? You don't. You think he did, but you don't know for sure.
You don't know for sure. The way you have set up that story, he is a fucker. What do you think, people? Yeah. You know, people may have heard different things. Are there different things that we need to take into consideration with this story? My main thing in this was if his traveling companion, was it Bell?
Shannon Bell was Shannon the chap Bell. Who apparently went mad at the end.
Yeah. Okay, if Shannon Bell went mad in the first place, that's the first story you tell.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I entirely agree.
Yeah.
But was he trying to save the reputation of his friends?
No. With everything that happened beforehand, if that is true. Now, is that hearsay after the fact where people go, like, oh, he was always a wrong one and he lied and he wasn't a very good guy? Why did he suddenly have this moral compass when he turns up and says, oh, we just nibbled our way through the people as they died on the train? Because that's more plausible. Yeah. It's more plausible that several people died on the train. We've done this in a previous cannibalism story where the guy ate fucking everyone and killed people along the way and just went, oh no, they died of natural causes. But he was just nibbling, not for very long as well. And this isn't very long in comparison. But yeah, you would say, if the guy had gone mad and shot everyone, you would turn up at the camp and said, someone went mad.
Yeah, absolutely.
He ate everyone. I'm really disturbed. I had to survive. That's the story you tell.
Yes.
Maybe there's an outside chance that you would make up something else.
These were entire strangers to him at the beginning of the trip. It's not like if they were your best mate from childhood or a member of your family, you might make up something
exactly
to paint them in a better light. But these were entire strangers to him at the beginning of the trip. As you say, there is no reason not to go with, he's a nutter, he did all this, I ran for my life, and this is what I had to do.
Exactly. He has been caught. They have retraced the steps of his trail, apparently. And when he has been caught, he has then gone, okay, here's the real story. Someone else killed them all and I wasn't there at the time. Why would he not be killed?
No.
Why would he not be killed? Definitely 8 people. A horrible, horrible situation.
For sure.
The guy had a terrible start to life. Obviously dealt some bad hands.
Mm.
Was not happy. Don't volunteer to take people through the mountains. And just that, oh, it's whatever bad start you have in life, I'm sorry, that fucking white male big dick energy when you've got a tiny, tiny dick of just like, I reckon I can
conquer the Rocky Mountains, no
I
bother.
Can do this. This is fine. They're famously easy just to get some food and just trying to get the gold. It was greed. And then when you're lazy along the way, I don't buy it. Don't buy it. Don't like it.
Nope.
Now, the thing is, I don't know how all of them died at once. I could believe along the way that he'd bumped some people off or like they'd tripped over and then he'd eaten them. But the way he says about Mr. Bell killing people.
Was it him that went mad?
Yeah.
Was it him that went mad with a hatchet and then just did away with everyone? That could have been it. So it must have been a fairly blitzy attack. If it was all him, yeah. It would have been something, yeah, hit and run type of thing.
It doesn't seem to stack up, this sudden frenzied attack.
The more you think
about
it, it goes,
For the sounds of it, he'd be the first person you'd kill.
Yes, that's very true.
Everyone would be around going, okay, we need to survive. Let's kill him because he's awful and he's not a guide. And he's just very annoying.
Yeah, or it could well be that, yeah, is Israel Swan, who was the older guy, died first. They decided, yep, yeah, okay, we've got this new resource for some food, so let's have at it. As you say, he got a taste for it.
It's so stupid. It's making me think of the Donmar party and all these things.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, the more you get into cannibal stories, it really disturbs you. There's a practical part of your brain that kicks in and go, you really wouldn't kill 5 people at once? You'd really probably walk along the trail a bit more and then kill them off one by one. So
well,
got
yeah, I mean, absolutely. If you had to do that. Yeah, I mean, yes, if it was your whole intention was to, I need to get out of here, and to do that, I need food. Yeah, you wouldn't do it all in one go, would you? Would people, someone catches you doing away with someone else?
Is it become a frenzy?
Is going to catch on to the fact that you've done this to 2 other people further down the trail?
Yeah.
And then it's like, who am I next type thing? That becomes risky.
Them or us.
Yeah.
He took a long time to get through the
I mean, 2 months for 75 miles is a pretty long old time. So that's settling in at a camp for a decent length of time.
And that's upsetting.
Yeah.
That's the not, I'm not doing this to survive and get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
I'm going to settle in and eat human flesh.
Yeah. This is
for
not
quite
a
while.
I'm walking for 2 months trying to get out of here and I'm just that lost. It's I've made camp. I've made my house for a few weeks.
People who know the Donmar party will know the Donmar party. You know, that was, and there's so much we could discuss about that. It doesn't feel like this is as snowed in and trapped in this destitute, awful months and months and months without being able to move on. Maybe more people know about this story. And is it a situation where they were literally snowed in and it was a case of whatever happened? It was like, no, we just need to survive.
Mm.
We could be snowed in for months on end. And actually it was like, oh no, it's fine. I'll just walk out. But no one else did. But then they got into the heart of the mountain.
Oh, yes.
Who
knows?
I
think that's why it went got down to manslaughter, because you just don't know. You cannot be sure.
But that general, he was sitting there.
General Adams, we like General Adams.
We like General Adams. Yeah. He had a Negroni the whole way through this.
I'm sure I'm going to Google General Adams, and he's done horrendous things. Massacred tribes and villages and all sorts.
This was his one saving grace, maybe.
But he did this well.
He did this well, yes. Well, what do you think, people? Do you know the story? What do you think happened up in the mountains? How much of Packard's story do you believe? How much do you think, actually, you know, the winter madness descends on you? Should we be being a bit more discerning about it? Is it justifiably manslaughter, if you can call it that? Or was it cold-blooded murder by someone who was greedy for gold?
Exactly.
They were all on the route to get gold. Everybody wanted
and
that.
And he likes the things that the other people had. He took their cash. He took their knives and things. So, yeah, loving all that.
Flashing
the cash.
What do you think about the story? If you know the story, tell us your theories. Tell us your ideas. Share more stories about it. And most importantly, though, while thinking about these chilly, chilly nights in the middle of a mountain, mix yourself up a Corpse Reviver
It's gone down a treat.
Oh, that was so good. That's one of the best we've had in a while.
It's been a long time since we've had one that good.
Wholeheartedly, the Corpse Reviver series, as it were, the ones we've tried, do them. They're so good.
Yep.
They'll get you there. a great, great cocktail. We'll put out the recipe for the corpse whiskers on Friday night, because we'd love you to not only tag us in your cocktail pictures, mix some stuff up and tag us in your videos. Share us your reels or your TikToks, whatever you wish.
A TikTok, indeed.
Indeed.
I don't know about such things.
Should we join TikTok?
Well, you
people?
Can. I can't be bothered.
And we very much know that you can't be bothered.
What is TikTok? Why am I saying TikTok?
We get sent a lot of TikTok videos, actually. You just never look at them. Well, maybe we'll join TikTok this weekend and we'll do a dance. It'll be lovely. And if you haven't already, make sure you come and find us on Patreon. New episodes every single week. Lots of bonus content. Come and join us. It's completely flexible. We'd love to see you there. And we'd love to hear more suggestions of stories that we could be covering. Old and new. And you know what, Nick?
Yes.
It's spooky month coming up.
Yes.
No. Spooky season. Spooky month. We need those ghost stories. We need murder, poison-related ghost stories. Don't just send us ghost stories. Good, ghosty, murdery stories. What can we cover for Halloween? We've maybe got some ideas.
Got some ideas going on.
But send us your suggestions and maybe we'll do it.
Maybe we won't.
Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisoner's cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Bye.